Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along. Monday evening's Off the Ball, Joe Malloy with you. First time in a long time, we have a standout, brilliant Irish performance and Irish win all in one to talk about. Against England as well, just to put the cherry on the icing. We've got Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. Pat Nevin will be on the football show talking about Manchester United's bombing out of the FA Cup, amongst other things. Irish international Áine O'Gorman will be on as well. The Women's League of Ireland season gets underway this weekend coming. Plus, for Stephen Kenny, the road to World Cup 2022 starts on Wednesday. The injury news keeps coming, unfortunately. The team departed for Serbia this afternoon. Dan McDonald's going to join us 7:30 and fill us in. 53106, the text number. Do get in touch at Off the Ball on Twitter. Standout performers for Ireland. Put them to Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood after 8 o'clock. Richie McCormack, hello.
Joe, how are you?
Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Evening, Joe, Richie.
Fair to say, Adrian, I don't think we quite saw Ireland 32, England 18 coming. That was the best, by some distance, performance of the Andy Farrell tenure of his 14 games thus far, and probably right back to 2018.
Fair to say, Joe, that we were talking at this show a couple of weeks back about natty jumpers and Bryson DeChambeau's nice little red number after he won a couple of weeks back, and you're keeping up the fine tradition there this evening yourself. It's a lovely little number. It's a bit more sort of Christmassy, I would suggest, than March. But look at you're holding up the fashion end for the three of us here tonight. It was class, wasn't it? It was great.
Class, like, yeah. It was class. It was exciting. It was brilliant. Like, it wasn't just, okay, they played average rugby and won by 5 points or won by 10 points. It was just a brilliant performance.
And it felt like nearly, I know the opening 5 minutes, and Andy Farrell talked about it after the game, were a bit hairy. I have to admit, looking at it at that point, going, oh, geez, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
But they managed to hold that out, and it felt like really inevitable, to the point that, like, you saw CJ Stander, there must have been about a half an hour on the clock, comes out of a ruck and is smiling away to himself, and the players are smiling and looking around in a way, that sort of relaxed view of, like, we are going to win this, really, no matter what, which rarely, I mean, you never get between Ireland and England. You rarely get in a Six Nations match. And, like, the Tadhg Byrne performance again, I certainly wondered about the move into the second row, whether that would hinder his general play, maybe his Lions prospects. But, I mean, it did anything but. If anything, it kind of confirmed his position for all of that.
Yeah. Some champagne rugby thrown in for you, Richie.
Yeah, I would have thought you look like George the Animal Steele, the WWE Hall of Famer, in that jumper. That's another story. Yeah, Byrne was amazing. Henshaw was fantastic. But I think it was the confluence of performances, because there's been bits and pieces dotted throughout this tournament whereby throughout the course of it, while we're in the midst of it, there was a lot of questioning whether things were going right. And the loss to Wales was tempered with Peter O'Mahony sending off. The loss to France was, you know, tempered with the fact that, you know, we got within 2 points of them, and that France side looked very, very good, and we kept them to, I think, knocking on a low score for them during the course of the tournament. But we all kind of thought, yeah, but we're really not there at the races, are we? And it just showed that when everything does fall our way, when we do put our plans into action, and when players perform at their known abilities, then these performances are indeed there. And I don't think it'd be fair to pick out individual performances, although your Tadhg Byrne is obviously one that you're going to, Robbie Henshaw is another, yeah. And the effervescent Keith Earls. I mean, this guy looks like he's playing like he's 24, 25, and I think most people, being fair to him, would have had him perhaps written off going into this tournament, thinking that, you know, maybe it's a stretch to be including him in four of the five games in the starting 15, but no, he has justified his every minute on the pitch.
Yeah. Loads of great performances. Hugo Keane, under the high ball defensively, brilliant. And then his take in the build-up to the Conan try after the Sexton kick, he's 17 cool phases as. In was just brilliant as well. Tyke Furlong. Oh, welcome back, Tyke Furlong. Oh, my God. How we missed you, Tyke Furlong. I mean, he made that brilliant break and then offloaded to Stander in the build-up to the Conan try. You know, those hands he has are so brilliant, and obviously the physicality he brings. He had Mako Vunipola in his pocket to the extent Vunipola was taken off at half-time. And then there was a slow-motion shot of him after a turnover, a big moment, where he sort of did a Riverdance high kick, which looked all the more beautiful in slow motion. And you just think, wow, this guy's the real deal. But all over, Adrian, I mean, it's... God, it's just nice, because really from Aviva Stadium 2019, round one of the Six Nations, the Irish team, it has felt like, are pretty much... either going backwards or standing still. That's a long old time.
And the biggest shame, and I appreciate how this says more about me than it does about anything else, is that if we don't have a quick week turnaround or a couple of weeks where we can actually see, is this true? Were we doing it for CJ? And that was the emotion of the game. And that's why it worked out that way. Was it that England were crap? Was it the fruition of, you know, how many of the interviews afterwards did you hear where the player or the coach went, we told you this was coming? I mean, as we're to believe all professional athletes, when they tell us we're right there. But it's impossible to know, Joe. You're left feeling with a sense of, God, that was amazing. It was a couple of hours really well spent. Great to get one over on Eddie Jones, never mind about England and everything that went in the mix for that. But where are we at? I'm still sort of... You made a good point in the TV afterwards about, like, if this had come in the first round and then all the other stuff had followed, what would we be saying? And so we are left with a bit of a sense of, God, it'd be great to get another couple of games to go and see exactly, is this the grand plan? I mean, like if this is the... You listen to a lot of seasoned commentators in the lead into the game talking about the absence of any clear attacking plan, and like you could tell that yourself looking at it, handy enough, didn't seem as if we had any great coherence about our play defensively in an attack. So is this now the Andy Farrell, has he landed? Is this it now? Does it wear in for every game we see from here on out? That's kind of what I want to see.
For sure. Hell, it's a damn nicer question to be asking as we head towards the summertime then. God, is this the right coaching ticket? Which is where I suspected the conversation would have been if England had come and pumped them for the fifth time in a row. So isn't that a much better question? We've got Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. We should start the news round and Off the Ball on News Talk. It is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. And Richie, you're starting with Ellis Genge, who I think we were all fairly certain would be cited.
Yeah, I had a piece on this with Darren and Owen and co on Saturday. He has avoided a sighting for an incident involving Ireland captain Jonathan Sexton. The England prop appeared to grind his elbow into the face of Sexton while on the ground during Saturday's game at the Aviva. However, no retrospective action will be taken against Genge. Meanwhile, Bundee Aki will face a disciplinary panel tomorrow after he was red-carded in that 32-18 Ireland win for a high tackle. Eddie Jones, meanwhile, has been meeting with RFU Chief Executive Bill Sweeney today to begin a review into England's campaign. Defeats to Scotland, Wales and Ireland saw England finish fifth. And speaking of this morning's OTB AM, former Ireland back row Alan Quinlan questioned whether Jones is the right man to lead them into the next World Cup.
They say he is, but I think tactically England are very, very blunt. They kick the letter off the ball. They try overpower teams. And, you know, the game evolves every couple of years, Jerome. You know, teams probably are figuring out what Ireland experienced 2 years ago against England in the first game of the Six Nations 2019, where England just smothered Ireland into submission, overpowered them, and kicked a lot, and they try and play in the opposition half and force mistakes. They've got to add a little bit more.
You were very diplomatic, Richie, the way you scripted that, as Ellis Genge appeared to press his elbow into the face of Sexton.
Well,
I mean, it was...
If there's no action being taken, Joe, I have to be very, very careful on this one. But although he does, he admitted it on the
pitch. It's the mad thing. Sexton said to the referee, you know, he's after doing this elbow in my face. And the referee said, well, look at it afterwards, Johnny, which was a strange thing for the referee to say, as opposed to, well, look at it now. But Genge said, yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I did. It's just bizarre.
It's bizarre.
I think just a moment of absolute madness from Genge, whether he escapes without censure or not. And I don't know if there is still scope for him to possibly face a disciplinary hearing over this one, because I don't think it's going to go away. And I don't think it paints Six Nations rugby in the most welcoming of lights when you see a player escaping with an incident like that, offset by what we saw Aki sent off for, and then earlier in the tournament Peter O'Mahony sent off for, and again Peter Willems, who's going to face a disciplinary panel himself tomorrow for his tinkering with the eyes of Wyn Jones in Paris on Saturday night. Like, this is all serious foul play, and it's stuff that you're looking to stamp out of the game for one reason or another, be it the protection of the players' noggins or just the general safety on the pitch and fair play and all that kind of stuff. And Genge exhibited none of that, and it was very definitely you would have thought that if Matthew Reynal saw that at the moment, that he would have given him a card, and it'd probably be a red one. So how they can look back on this and say, yeah, no, it probably wasn't a red card, it's just it escapes reason.
Yeah, it's surprising. I don't know, do they publish a rationale, or will they do that in due course? But we'll let you know if they do.
There was something, Joe, I don't know about it. The siding commissioner hadn't mentioned it, so they felt as if they were obliged to then not run with it. But, I mean, okay. I saw Murray Kinsella tweeting there to say that he must have looked back in the footage, that you could hear before that Genge saying, "Grandad wouldn't let go of me," as in Sexton was obviously holding him down the ground, and that was where that conversation originated from. But look, you remove Genge from it, like, it was a horrific act, and so he's not responsible for no action being taken about it. Like you say, he seemed, whether it was an act of bravado or whatever, just to say afterwards that he accepted he did it. But it's incredible. Like, I just don't understand how everybody leaves that game and the footage of it afterwards, and there is no leeway in the rules to be able to say everybody in the planet has seen an act of foul play here. Forget about due process. Let's just get this reviewed. Like, what sort of a message is it sending out? Like, it is tempting to, as Richie said, sort of compare it to some of the other stuff that went on over the weekend, but just look at it in pure isolation. And really, there's got to be, like, I think the door is shut on any action, to be honest, Richie, on that question. I think it's, I don't know that they can go back and do anything after this. But you would like to hear the credible voices in rugby come out against it. And, you know, it looks like it's going to pass by, but it never should again.
Richie, Republic of Ireland then?
Yeah, they have departed Dublin for their first World Cup qualifier. The entire group returned negative COVID-19 results ahead of Wednesday's game away to Serbia. West Brom forward Callum Robinson was in front of the media before flying to Belgrade, and he believes it is only a matter of time before the tide begins to turn in Stephen Kenny's favour.
You start panicking when you're not actually getting the chances. Like, we are getting some good chances. And I obviously have missed the last few games through the COVID reasons, which was annoying. But it's been hard for the gaffer as well. You've got to remember, I think there's 14, 15 players by the last game, in the last trip, from the team that he picked. So it's tough. The team's changing all the time because of obviously all the COVID stuff, which is, we can't help that. So it's tough to I know that everyone's having to deal with it, but when you have like 14, 15 players from who is picked in the first squad to then the last game, all them changes, it's tough. So I don't think that no one should be down about it. I just think that, you know, it's like one goes in, two goes in, or we get a win, even if it's off an own goal, you get a win, and then just everyone picks themselves up and we go again. So I'm not personally down. Obviously I can't speak for everyone, but I don't think there should be any pressure at all. Should just go out there and play, and as I said before the Slovakia game, in one of these I was confident, and I was, and I thought we'd done really well that night, and lucky to lose on penalties, but we created chances, done really well, broke Slovakia down through the thirds. I don't think many supporters have seen football like that from us in a long time. So there's small steps, but as you said, the main thing is the result at the top, and that needs to change, and goals that need to come. So it's understandable why people can be annoyed, but I think we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, Callum Robinson there. I think he's right in pointing to the play against Slovakia, which was probably Ireland's best performance in many ways, albeit didn't result in go the way they wanted, and penalty shootout transpired the way it did. Five of those players involved that night, and you presume that is very much Stephen Kenny's best team in his own mind, are injured, and the injury news has kept coming at quite the pace. So it seems Mark Travers will be in goal for Ireland now. He's at Swindon at the moment. He's on loan at Swindon. I just had a look before coming in air. So he hasn't played a game since the 9th of February. And there are quite a few players who are not playing much football as well. Looking through the list, I did a good old deep dive into where we are. And it's worrying in terms of match sharpness, if that counts for something. You wish the Luxembourg game was before the Serbia game in some ways. And I guess, Adrian, the question is who's going to score goals? I mean, that was the question in the seven games thus far. I had a quick glance to see, is there anything that we can kind of hang our hat on? So Aaron Connolly, I mean, his last game was 4 weeks ago. He has scored 2 goals in 18 this season. Ronan Curtis, in his last 22 games at Portsmouth, has scored 2 goals. Callum Robinson there, he scored 2 goals at Stamford Bridge back in September, and we thought, wow, this is brilliant. But his last appearance for West Brom was on the 2nd of February. Shane Long, he has scored 2 goals in February, played 10 days ago for Bournemouth, which isn't so bad, I guess. James Collins then at Luton, 1 goal in 19. You know, all these kind of 1 goal in 19, 2 goals in 18 stats, they're when you're Stephen Kenny and you've got a World Cup campaign which is 8 games, you need someone to pop up and do it in those 8 games, like 1 in 18, 1 in 15, at a lower level doesn't quite inspire confidence. I guess we're just hoping something happens, which, you know, it sometimes does in international football, I guess, you know. But like, you know, there's nothing on paper with all the injuries and with the lack of goals to really feel like you have something concrete to take into this Serbia game. You're just hoping they muster something up.
Nothing. It's all about hope, isn't it? Like, that's, and you say we've been talking about it for the last 7 games. We've been talking about it for the last, what is it, 4 or 5 years since Robbie Keane retired. Like, we're that player who's going to be knocking in goals for us just isn't coming along. And like, maybe there's a couple of them at underage level that might mature a bit and come in the shorter term, but or in the medium term at least anyway. But like, I think you're right, Callum Robinson and Aaron Connolly are probably amongst the two that you'd be looking at. Like, there's Shane Long come back in and he's never been consistent but has managed to score one-off goals in big games for us, so so we'll see. Like, but yeah, it is really about hope. And I don't know, like, Callum Robinson, I agreed, I found myself in agreement with most of the things he had to say there in that little clip, other than the floodgates opening. Like, once you score once or twice and then suddenly the floodgates are going to open. Like, I really don't see that with this Ireland team. Like, I think we're going to be scrimping and saving. I'm not so worried, I think, maybe regretting this now come Wednesday night, but about the goalkeeper not having too much game time. Like, I think no matter who was going to be in there, I mean, I guess it would have been Caoimhín Kelleher, would it, if he had been fit? And obviously he himself not seeing too much game time, so wouldn't have been as worried about that. But obviously, keep it tight at the back there see how we get on. And like, but I just don't know. It's this conversation is not going anywhere anytime soon in terms of the solution for that.
Troy Parrott, come on through. We're ready, Troy. Anytime you want to get moving. Yeah,
what's he doing even? He obviously scored
for Ipswich there last week.
Last week,
And he's not going to start in Belgrade, according to Kenny, as of his press conference last week. So
he hasn't become that player, has he?
That we were all, you know, when he was at Tottenham.
He's still really, really young. Like, there's plenty of time for him to do that. To be relying on him to be at the Robbie Keane level now would be a fool's
errand. Give it to us now. Get away.
Adrian, Barry, taking no prisoners. Troy Parrott. Barry writes off 18-year-old. He just never became the player we thought he would. So we'll see. We'll talk to Dan very shortly and see what he makes of everything. Now, Will Connors, this injury more serious than we'd hoped?
Yes, he's set to miss the remainder of Leinster's Heineken Champions Cup campaign. The flanker is out for up to 8 weeks due to a knee injury. Gary Ringrose will almost certainly miss the last 16 visit of Toulon to the RDS. That's due to an ankle injury. While James Ryan is out of Saturday's Pro 14 final with Munster as he continues to follow the return to play protocols. Connacht are aiming to finish their Pro 14 campaign on a high tonight. Andy Friend's side are in Clonmacnoise to play the Scarlets. Kickoff there is at 8. And Friend forced into one late change. Jack Ainger misses out through injury. So Dominic Robson comes into the starting 15 at Loosehead with Finlay Beelam coming onto the bench.
There's a text in, would Genge not be incited to have something to do with a Lions selection? Would any ban carry over to the Lions tour, says Damien Santry? No, I don't think so, Damien. I mean, he would have been getting 3-4 matches, 5 matches maybe, but I mean, they would have been well and truly served by the time any Lions tour came around. Have all the back slapping you want, but Sexton's 22 points yesterday proved once again that Irish rugby remains utterly dependent on a much battered 36-year-old body, says Brian. As you'll hear Brian later on, Keith Wood, Brian Driscoll, they were effusive about Sexton's performance for sure, his best maybe in years, and he's had a very good championship and he's managed to put 80 minutes back to back. But they were making the point, actually, they weren't as reliant on him as they have been, that it wasn't always Sexton at first receiver, that there was a tempo about things and it wasn't just Conor Murray getting to the ball and waiting for Sexton. It was boom, boom, boom. Lots of different players involved. Lots of different players playing first receiver. And of course, look, there's Joey Carberry to come back as well. Lads, if we want to talk about acts of violence, frankly, the entire Rugby Ireland team should have been red carded for tearing England a new one, says Paul. There we go. Richie, this news, we've been waiting for this really for a long time. Yeah. So the O'Donovan brothers, who stole everyone's hearts, including Graham Norton's, at the Olympics last time out, basically there's competition to see who gets really to partner Paul, who's kind of maybe the one who's probably fairly certain of his place. And there was a lot of competition, and they've been having their various trials to see who would partner Paul at the Olympics. And so the verdict is in. It won't be the O'Donovan brothers.
Yeah, this was kind of signposted a long way out, given Ireland's much got international showings last year. The O'Donovan brothers won't be competing together at this year's Summer's Olympics. Fintan McCarthy has instead been selected alongside Paul O'Donovan to represent Ireland in the lightweight doubles in Tokyo. Paul won silver in Rio 5 years ago alongside his brother Gary, who now finds himself without a boat.
Yeah, bittersweet, Adrian, I'd say.
Fintan McCarthy, what are you doing to us? Like, ruining the whole spirits of a nation. Get behind the two lads pulling like a dog. Listen, I'm sure obviously he's the best man for the job at the minute. So good luck to him. But the two lads are such, like, what gets lost in a lot of the conversation about the two lads is what amazing dedicated athletes they are. Yeah. Obviously, but they do give us great entertainment. Like, you know, the people who know nothing about rowing or know nothing about sport know about the two lads, and that's the impact they've had. And you know, Finbar McCarthy, you have a lot to live up to.
I was always taken aback.
Fintan McCarthy.
Fintan.
I got to speak to the O'Donovan dad, obviously, in Rio 5 years ago, just not long after the race. And I was even taken aback by when he mentioned, just like really casually in passing, that Gary would have been the lesser of the two in terms of rowing, and he would have had to apply himself more, and he would have had to put more into it, and where Paul was the more natural rower and therefore was the one who always seemed destined for this kind of thing, whereas Gary was... You know, he had to work and work and work to get there. And he certainly did. And to be honest with you, to A, go to an Olympics at all is quite something. And to come away, as Gary and Paul did 5 years ago, with a silver medal, like, you've done enough at that stage. Going again is an absolute bonus. And fingers crossed for Paul and for Fintan going forward.
No, absolutely. I'm sure it's tough for Gary, for sure. Paul is, by all accounts, a bit of a genetic freak. I think his VO2 max is off the charts, and he's got some... I mean, I am no expert, clearly, but whatever flexibility he has in his shoulders means for better stroke, and just seems to be a phenomenon. Quiet, you know, such a, like, quietly going about his business, training to be a doctor and or a surgeon, I think, you know, and like top of his sport globally. So he's a phenomenon.
Jeez, you'd trust him with a knife, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah. Yeah,
he has that bit of an eye about him. Gary, not so much, to be honest with you.
No, Gary, I'll take my chance, Gary. I'm going to just see what happens before we go in and remove it. I'll
That's
just,
right. There's a bit more rehab I can do here.
I spoke to Paul a couple of weeks ago. He was on, and I never asked him about the Graham Norton thing. So I was saying, you know, what was it like? And we were chatting about it a bit, and he was saying, just at the end, he said, and the good thing he hadn't expected was Graham and brought them all out for dinner afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah, because I mean, you just assume with these things, everyone, you know, and that's a wrap. Okay, bye everyone, straight into the car home. So Graham brought him out for dinner, and then he goes, and James was there too. It's like, James who? He goes, McAvoy. I was like, bloody hell. And he goes, oh, Michael was there too. It's like, Michael who? Fassbender. So it was the O'Donovans, Norton, McAvoy, Fassbender for a nice dinner out in London. I'd say that night was good.
Proper Munster Championship chats around that table, wouldn't there be? Kerry, Cork represented, and then you've got McAvoy, who'll probably throw his lot in with someone like Tip.
Yeah. See, when you're doing your studies, Joe, to become to win the, what's it called now, the IMRO Broadcaster of the Year for the 14th year running, like, the thing you haven't counted for is that you need to be bringing some of your guests out for dinner and just doing a bit of schmoozing, and listen, the way this world works.
I'm all about the schmoozing. Yeah. So, France, after the weekend, have Friday, Scotland, Paris. They have to win by 21 points or more.
Yeah. And they have been hit with an injury. France out half Matthew Jalibert out of that Six Nations deciding match with the Scots. The 22-year-old sustained a head injury in Saturday evening's thrilling win over Wales. And Jalibert's place in the starting 15 will likely go to Roman Entemac, with Louis Carbonell taking his place in the squad. Scotland, for their part, have Adam Hastings back for Friday's game. He returns from suspension, but there's no place in the squad for Sean Maitland, Fraser Brown, or indeed Johnny Gray.
Just one last one, Richie. Interesting story around Roman Abramovich.
Yeah, Chelsea owner Roman Abramovich has launched legal proceedings over what he calls false and defamatory statements in a book published last year called Putin's People. It claims the billionaire bought the London club in 2003 on the personal orders of the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Abramovich's lawyers have filed a defamation suit against the publishers HarperCollins and indeed its owner Catherine Belton.
Okay, interesting. Fellas, we'll leave it there. 8 o'clock, we have Brandon Driscoll, Keith Wood. We have Dan McDonald up next. Richie McCormack, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Adrian Barry, as ever, you were wonderful.
You can stop with the schmoozing. Thank you, Joseph.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.